southern right to wrong. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag has gained the 11th star. Hurrah, hurrah for southern right to wrong. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag has gained the 11th star. Then here's to our Confederacy, strong we are and brave. Like patriots of old, we'll fight our heritage to save. And rather than submit to shame, to die we would prefer. So cheer for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hurrah, hurrah for southern rights, hurrah. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag has gained the 11th star. Hurrah, hurrah for southern rights, hurrah. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag has gained the 11th star.
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Oh, let me turn this down a little bit here. I'm going to turn that up a little bit. And this back over here. If you're hearing fans in the background, that can only mean one thing. I am live. And you're listening to Stronghold Radio. I'm Dutch Jones, coming to you from Camp Kuia. We weren't here yesterday. I had to go to the VA. Long story. I went there and almost got arrested. You know it's illegal to go around without an ID card? They consider it some type of fraud. Huh? I'm a rebel, aren't I? I'm a bad rebel, Lou says, because I don't have an ID card. So, I am worse than a crack dealer. But thank you for tuning in. Sorry we couldn't be with you yesterday, Monday. Today is the, where are we? Are we on the 12th already? 12th of July, 2011. But I spent too much time at the VA yesterday. By the time I got back, it was just, actually, there's no way. It was like the middle of the show and we were still gone, so. I should have done the show from the waiting room where I was at in the VA. That would be funny, me yelling all this stuff out loud over a headset through my phone or something. Maybe one day we'll do that, but not yesterday. So thank you for bearing with us. I don't know if it played an old show. I don't know if it lost it. It's just we have so many problems with the internet, but we are here now, and we're up, and things are good, and we thank everybody who's here for tuning in, and I think... Let's see, whether you're listening on Facebook, listening through Ustream, some of the embeds where they're at, or this is a, what would be the word, a podcast that you're listening to. We thank you for tuning in. We're here at Stronghold Radio, and what we do here, when I say we, it's me, the guy sitting to my left, Lou, my son, the pastor, Warren Mark Campbell, on Thursdays, Steve Klein on Tuesdays, which is today, so stick around. He'll be here in about an hour, a little less than an hour. We try to bring you a militant Christian worldview, and the reason that we do that is we want you to be able to defend the faith. I got to turn my headphones down and my microphone up because it looks like I'm not really moving that very much. Let me do this. Oh man, that brings up a bunch of the background. Oh well, I'll just turn my headphones down. But we want you to be armed. This isn't about us. This is about the cause. This is about our faith and our families, and it's about putting forth a desire to educate and train people in things that aren't being taught in churches or in families even these days. So we do what we can. And you've got guys like IC Freedom there in the chat room. He's in some kind of Christian group chat room right now trying to get people to come over here and listen. And if you are, thank you. We appreciate that if you've come over because IC Freedom or whatever name he has put there. But it's all about love what we do here. We love our families more than we would love our enemies, because we're instructed to love our enemies. And who are our enemies? I was talking to Steve on the phone with us today, because we got so many different people that listen to this show and come to the outreaches that Steve does and come to the conferences that we do here and the trainings that we do every... seems like we're doing a training every 2 weeks now. We get all different kinds of people. And we tend to deal with them on a very simple basis. If you love Christ and you're willing to share the gospel with all races, creeds, and colors, then we do welcome you. Once in a while, we get people that are, you know, a little limited in what they want to share. We're not big on, well, we don't allow white supremacists. We don't allow Masons, Mormons, things like that. People that are a little more limited. But if you're willing to come and share and train with us, we'll share the gospel with you. And we expect you to share that with others too. One of the big things is the anti-Zionist stuff. And as you know, I'm an anti-Zionist just as much as I am an anti-white supremacist. And some people get really mad because they're like, well, you're an anti-Jew. No, I'm not an anti-Jew. I'm an anti-Zionist. So the anti-Zionists come here and they get mad that we're yelling at the Muslims and things like that. Well, you know, like I said, the true test is if you love Jesus Christ and you love your family more than you love your enemy, and whoever dislikes us or is out to get us, that's who we're against. I'm not going to spend all day giving you lists of who the enemies of Dutch Jones are. If they are counter to what we're putting down here, they are counter to Jesus Christ. If they're Luciferians out there doing that, they're our enemy, period. And I think Steve's going to talk a little bit more about that in the next hour when we bring him in, and that'll be good. But it's always good to talk about who we're for versus who we're against. So we're for those that love Christ. We're for those men and women that are raising Christian families. We're for churches that are preaching the true, undiluted gospel, untruncated gospel. We're for, politically, we're for states' rights. We're for individual freedoms and accountability to Jesus Christ. You can't just go do whatever you want. That would be anarchy. So we are very, very, very much for freedom and liberty within the confines of what our Lord Jesus Christ has designed for us. No king but King Jesus. Something flying around in here. What was that? I don't know, probably a bird flew in the window. But a big thunk just happened behind us. I don't know. But it makes it easier for us to say, rather than what we're against, we'll tell you what we're for. We love our families and our faith and our God, especially, more than we love our enemies. So that's why we do this militant Christian worldview. And we fight every day. We train every day. We study every day. We share the gospel every day. Of course, I get a great chance of doing it here on the radio show, but we're very well balanced. We are extremely into being about the cause and doing what needs to be done every day. And then we throw in some political stuff, some current events, practical stuff, more. I hope more than not. We like to throw in practical stuff, you know, what people can do to make sure their family survives and make sure that they're... you know, they can defend themselves. That's why we do things like Man Camp and the conference and the Code 20 and Christian Defenders and martial arts training and all those things that we offer to the general public. And then we have our own in-house training that we offer just to those that are abiding in fellowship with us. But that's what we do here. That is, in a nutshell, Stronghold Radio. It's about who we love and protecting them from who we love less. If that makes sense. So, you know, I get the emails every once in a while. Why are you not big on Israel? Why are you anti-Muslim? We're not anti-anything. We're pro-us. And that's just the way it goes, and that's the way it's going to be. So thank you for tuning in. And without further ado, I've got some articles here. I actually have one that's just utterly, completely, totally ridiculous. This one's from Arizona, and it has to do with the Second Amendment. And it has to do with something that I always say here. Our own worst enemies on the Second Amendment issue are untrained, uninformed, uneducated, just idiot gun owners. You know, I'm not for a license to own a gun. I'm not for any kind of permit. But there's a responsibility that when you own a firearm, just like you would a chainsaw, you need to sit down, read the owner's manual, and come up with a good practices plan how you're going to use that chainsaw. Do you run around with that chainsaw in the living room showing everybody what you can do with it? Do you start that chainsaw up and point it at somebody? No. So why then would you show any less due diligence with a firearm? So this story comes in, and I'm just going to give you the title here, and you're going to be like, what? Arizona politician on defensive after reporter says she aimed a loaded gun at him. A reporter for the Arizona Republic writes in a profile of State Senator Lori Klein that the politician pulled a loaded raspberry pink handgun from a specially zippered case and aimed it straight at his chest during an interview. Now, the revelation mentioned offhand in the original story has now created a media firestorm about gun safety and the potential PR headache for gun advocates. Richard Ruelas, R-U-E-L-A-S, writes that Klein said, "Oh, it's so cute," before aiming the pistol square at his chest so he could see that the red laser sight beam appears on his body. It probably didn't help that the often adversarial character of relations between the press and the political leader for Ruelas to learn that the .380 Ruger in question had no safety. It was probably a revolver. And having been on the receiving end of this more times than I care to admit, as an instructor, I always have idiots show up to go, "Oh, look at my gun. Check this out." I had to sit down, and we had two people that come to our church, don't come anymore, but they were constantly pointing firearms at people. So finally I said, "Look, you can't carry a gun in church anymore." And coming from a Second Amendment church, from a Second Amendment guy like me, who wants people to feel comfortable carrying their weapons in church for self-defense, that was one of the hardest things I ever had to do. But these people habitually were stupid. And obviously this congresswoman is not free of that stupidity. Here's what she says. "I just didn't have my hand on the trigger," she told the reporter. "For one, you don't put your hand on the trigger, you put your finger on the trigger," trying to reassure the reporter. Realist was writing about the freshman lawmaker's controversial move to carry her pistol into the state house just 2 days after Representative Gabrielle Gifford, a Democrat from Tucson, was shot in the head while at a Congress on Your Corner event in January. Of course, you guys don't remember anything about that, do you? Guards tried to stop Klein from going in with the weapon, but she insisted on her right to carry, and the incident became something of a crusade for pro-gun movement people. Since then, Arizona Senate President Russell Pierce has lifted a weapons ban in the state Senate building, despite an existing state law that bans guns in government buildings. Even though Klein says she is standing up for the people's right to bear arms, some local gun rights advocates took issue with her antics, according to a report in the Arizona Guardian. Now, one, this is an example of a little information is a bad thing. I'd like to know if she's had any training. I'd like to know what her background is. I don't even know if she's a Democrat or a Republican. I don't think it even says it in the article. I've read it three times. I don't remember that coming up. Now, here's a quote. "Whoever would do something like that needs to have a better grounding in gun safety before they ever lay a hand on a firearm," says Rob Mermelstein of the Phoenix Rod and Gun Club. He said the incident was bad PR for the gun rights movement. "I kind of cringed when I read that she had done that," said Ethics Rule Chair Ron Gould, a Republican, he told the Capital Times. "She wasn't brandishing the weapon. I think she just thought it would be cute to shine the laser on the reporter. I personally don't like seeing that kind of thing because that's how people get killed." Now, if you look at it, this woman was elected to office. One, I don't know what kind of, you know, district she comes from or anything, but how does somebody that stupid get elected into office? Well, I guess that's kind of a sign of the times. In a follow-up story, the Arizona Republic writes that Klein at first denied pointing the gun at Ruelas, telling the Arizona Capital Times that he sat down in front of where she was pointing it. But in a later statement issued through the Senate, Klein doesn't mention that version of events, only saying she won't comment on it anymore as not to contribute to the media feeding frenzy that is driven by a few individuals who never miss the opportunity to advance an anti-Second Amendment agenda, she said. She had cleared the gun's chamber before displaying it. That's another thing there. "Oh, but I unloaded the gun." And those of us that are around guns know that every gun is always loaded all the time. And people get mad at me for that, but I'm like, no, I don't care if if the gun is in your holster and you know it's unloaded, it's loaded. I don't care if the gun is in the drawer and you know it's unloaded, it's loaded. The only time I feel comfortable even remotely handling a weapon is when I have it disassembled and everything is in components and I've got the lower receiver in my hand. And even then, I feel uncomfortable doing it. I feel uncomfortable doing it with training weapons. We've got bright orange training weapons. We have airsoft training weapons. It is very hard for me to point any kind of weapon at anyone. Oh, it's unloaded. I know three people that have died in my life. I'm only 45. Three people that have died because of unloaded guns. One of my very, very, very good friends, Nick, died as a result of a wound that he put in his foot because he thought the gun was unloaded. He pulled the trigger. It didn't go off. He said, oh, it must be unloaded. And he pointed the weapon at his foot as he moved the weapon to inspect the bolt, and it was a hang fire, and it went off. Shot him through the foot. He went to the hospital, got flesh-eating bacteria, virus, whatever, and died. Because of, I mean, it sounds almost ridiculous. He gets a 22 round through the foot. He goes to the hospital, gets a much worse virus, and dies from it several years later. Literally ate him alive. And I know of two other people that have died because of unloaded guns. Someone picked up one in one case, pointed it at someone, pulled the trigger and blew him away. And the other one, a guy pretended to be doing Russian roulette with an unloaded revolver, and guess what? It was loaded. Every gun is always loaded all the time. And any of you that want to argue with me about that, I wouldn't trust you to stand next to me on a battlefield, a shooting range, anywhere, because you got to do that. Now, in combat, you're running around, you may sweep each other, I understand that. That's combat. It's a completely different scenario. But if we lose people in training and in haphazard accidents or even show this type of impropriety, this stupidity in public like this woman did, it hurts everybody. And it's ridiculous. It's a stupid waste. In a follow-up story, the Arizona Republic writes that Klein at first denied that she pointed the gun at Ruelas, saying that he sat down in front. Isn't that typical? Isn't that typical? You know, she's, oh, politicians, oh, no, I didn't do that. Oh, wait, you got proof that I did that? Ruelas says he didn't realize the gun was loaded until later in the interview and that their exchange was friendly and amicable. Their exchange was recorded on tape, which the paper says backs up Ruelas' report of the incident. We'll update this post if when and if Klein responds, it says in the article. Ridiculous stupidity. It reminds me of the DEA officer that said, oh, nobody in this room can handle this weapon. I'm the only one certified. And then he blew a hole in his leg. You know, it's just, it can happen to everybody. And it usually does. I've had negligent discharges. Fortunately, not one since I've been a grown-up. Well, I guess in the Army I was 18, so I don't count that one. I was still a child. I mean, I do count it. It was very serious. But I have had weapons that I 100% knew in my heart of hearts that it was unloaded. But because I always do a chamber check and a mag check, picked it up, and several times in my life I'm going, hey, this is loaded because somebody came along and loaded it. And inversely, what if somebody comes along and unloads it? You should always do a chamber check. I did it today. I hadn't been carrying my gun for a couple days because I went in the VA. You can't carry a weapon in there. So I had it, got home before I came up here to do the radio show. I went and got my pistol. I did a chamber check, did a mag check, made sure everything kind of functioned, put it in my holster, and here it sits on my hip. You've got to know the condition of your weapon at all times. But even when you know, that's not enough. You just assume it's loaded, which can get you killed, too, if you think there's going to be a bang when you pull the trigger. I love it. I didn't put my hand on the trigger. Your hand. She doesn't even know the proper terminology. And for any woman that thinks a laser sight is cute, slap them and take their gun. I would have just taken her gun from her and said, you can have this back after you go do a four-day class. And I would have sent her to Arizona Thunder Ranch or something like that. Said, you go to Front Sight, you know, go up there to the Church of Kuia for a four-day class, something. But you're not getting your gun back. That's the duty of any man, Christian man, when a woman or a child does something stupid like that. And there are men that are that dumb, too. I mentioned the two people that used to go to church here. The man was just as bad as the woman. Lou goes up to use a restroom here in the research center. He walks out and he's got a pistol pointed right at Lou's chest. It's just ridiculous. It's insane that people treat weapons with that kind of lackadaisical stupidity. And it's a shame that they have to do it in front of a reporter. But for every one of those, millions of people at that same moment had their weapons properly secured, properly handled their weapons. There were probably several people that used a weapon in that exact moment to protect a life. And that'll never make the news. Instead, they're going to make what this stupid woman did. And it doesn't matter that she's a woman, to be honest with you. It could have just as easily been a man, like I say. I don't want people to send me emails saying, oh, you're anti-woman. I prefer my gun holders to be men, but if a woman is there, she needs to know how to use it, too. I mean, I promote Stacy carrying a weapon. really? I see Freedom saying that this is a much more sane chat room, I guess, compared to where other chat rooms are. So, but welcome to everyone that's tuning in. I see people logging in and getting on board here. I appreciate you doing that. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about is, and where did I put that? I thought I had another article. Hang on here. Steve's going to talk a little bit more about it, but he's going to continue to protest Sheriff Baca. And they've got something coming up at the end of the month. And we'll make sure we can do get that information to you. Let's see. That can't be the only article. Oh, now I got it in front of me. Yes, 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 yes. Bada bing, bada boom. I get a lot of emails, hate mail. They go into the guest book at DutchJones.info and they leave it and on the YouTube account where the video's at. And, you know, they mock militias. They mock us specifically. You're a bunch of. And occasionally I get them from soldiers. We get soldiers that say things like, oh, you're just a bunch of wannabes, you know, and they don't even think for a minute that some of us, not only are we not wannabes, we're used to Ben's. And, well, you know, he was still a glimmer in his daddy's eye, a lot of these young people that leave comments. I was out, you know, going through a jungle with better men than he'll ever be. And they forget that. And they mock the militia because that's what they've been trained to do. They mock the whole concept of an armed citizenry defending itself against anything. We're all supposed to just be sheep. So I get these things, you know, from obviously from the non-Oath Keeper types. And it really, really angers me that they send me this stuff. But I have a standard letter that I've been sending them back, and I wanted to share that with you. I don't even acknowledge their ad hominem attacks or their stupidity. I just kind of say, okay, since you wanted to write this and you wanted to say this, let me give you some insight. And if they're not educated by it, then fine, they'll move on. I've had one guy go, well, I never thought of it that way. Partisans or soldiers, which would you choose to defend your homeland? Is kind of what I call this thesis. And if you think about it, before I go into this, it's one of the things that we're missing when you watch the news today. I don't mean specifically today, but you're not seeing huge refugee camps. Wars are waged in neighborhoods while the occupants stay there. They send in smaller groups. They send in strategic or tactical attacks rather than strategic. Gone are the days when an army would amass on your border. There'd be negotiations, people could prepare, and the refugees would leave, thus creating this huge open battlefield relatively free of civilians unless they were dumb enough to stick around. Slowly, in the last century, in the 1900s, 20th century, that changed. And armies got smaller, more specific, more direct attacks. And now what we see is a house-to-house type fighting while children are playing in the courtyard. You see our troops doing it constantly. You're not going to see a lot of refugees. So the paradigm of the modern soldier is completely different than that of, say, the man who fought World War II. I'm not saying one is better than the other morally, but when you break it down and you look at how they function, it's a completely different battlefield, or the term they like to use is battle space now. Some would argue, well, there's no room for a militia in that. And I would argue that there is even more room for a militia today in that type of paradigm of warfare. You couldn't have sent militias to Europe, which is unconstitutional anyway, to fight the German military the way that it was going over there, no. But the militia in France did fight them. Not successfully, they wouldn't have been able to hold out very long anyway, but at least they resisted. But smaller unit, smaller outposts, those types of things is ideal for a counter-militia defensive. I think it's actually good for us that armies have gotten smaller and more technical and more isolated and more finite in the way that they attack. People go, oh, the modern technology, you'll never win, but I'll get into that. Local armed men are not professional soldiers, nor should they act like they are. Militia strengths are local-based and usually unknown to the invading force. Armies and special operation groups that invade function with an intel funnel. It's a handicap until they build a local understanding of the situation. They know what they are told, and that is it. They haven't had a time to observe on the ground, to learn the ways of the people where they invade. Militia members know what they saw growing up and living in their battle space. Soldiers are motivated by political and economic means. The partisan, that's another word for militia, is motivated by a desire to protect his home, community, and most importantly, his family. So a soldier is going to have a different morale paradigm, a different moral attitude towards his enemy than, say, a militia guy. Combined arms discipline versus a competition of wits. So when I say combined arms discipline, you know how it is. We see it in the news and all that stuff, where they can call in huge airstrikes and rain down fire and hate and discontent versus a small unit that has to move about within its own environment and stay alive long enough to do as much damage as it can. The modern warrior has joint force communications that make it possible for the individual unit to request overwhelming destruction in almost any area of the battle space. We have all seen the evening propaganda reports on how American forces use drones, air support, and space-age surveillance to destroy our enemies. The reality is that if they cannot find and kill the intended target, all they are doing is destroying villages and landscape and recruiting for the jihad. The power of such an arsenal builds a false sense of security. When the combined forces of a fighter wing or battle group is just a phone call away, you become very dependent on that phone line and the guy who operates it, as well as the person who answers it on the other end. You take those folks out of the link, the guy who operates the phone, the guy who answers the phone itself, the amount of equipment required to communicate out of the battle, and all you have is a bunch of blind, overburdened, undersupported, invading Roman thugs. Our guys just aren't trained that way to think like liberators anymore. They go in, they break things, they kill people, they snatch things. Sure, they send in and they build churches and all that. I'm not denying that part of it. But the actual guys that bring the pain to the enemy are not all that specially trained anymore. We saw it when we watched Restrepo. We see it when we see the stuff coming back. Anytime they meet any kind of huge force, they have to call mommy, basically, the tactical operations center or command and control, and bring in all these things. And what ends up happening? Oh, well, the enemy carries off its dead. We have no idea what the body count is, a la Vietnam. The modern military, I'm using the American military, and I'm not hoping that we will face our own military, but I'm very realistic. But if you compare how if you take the American military as the paramount trained force in the world, it's pretty fair to do what I'm doing. You know, half of them are going to be Oath Keepers, I hope, and they'll be on our side anyway. But for this discussion, it's more like a SWAT team going into a neighborhood and not realizing that the entire neighborhood is armed and against them. And they can't call for backup because you snip their communications. What are they going to do? What are a bunch of cops going to do? They're so drunk with power, the modern military, because of what they can rain down. They become dependent on it like a heroin addict. But you take that away and there's nothing they can do. Being able to operate independently without command and control is a skill better built in a local militia than it was ever taught at West Point or the ROTC classroom. Even modern sniper teams deployed in warfare today must receive the go-ahead before they are allowed to take shots at critical targets. And the amount of gear on an army fire team, 5-6 guys, they bring computers and digital cameras into the field now. They can't move about the battlefield like the sniper in World War I or II, or even Vietnam. Let's see. Modern platoon leaders are not trained to think outside the box nor adapt to overwhelming force without the aid of picking up a radio and calling for help. The insurgent is alone and depends on his freedom of movement and local control to act as needed when engaged. As when the Romans engaged the barbarians in what is now modern-day Germany, it was quickly learned that lightly armored and loosely organized warriors, barbarians, will wreak havoc on a stronger and thought to be better disciplined, better trained, better equipped, better paid enemy. That's where the militia is and always has been. the strong point. That's where the militia is the way to put your bet. If you're going to bet on somebody, I'd bet on the local militia. And I can find all kinds of history to back this up. But I know you guys, you know, I'm preaching to the choir. We're getting ready to take a break right now because it's already a minute past it. And, well, I hear it there. Here comes the music. We're going to be back. We're going to talk about this a little more, and I'll give out the phone number. I want to get your opinion. We'll be right back on Stronghold Radio.
This river about a mile above this place. It'll be a little soggy, but just keep slogging. We'll soon be on dry ground. We were waist deep in the big muddy. The big pool said to push on. The sergeant said, sir, with all this equipment, no man will be able to swim. Sergeant, don't be a nervous Nelly, the captain said to him. All we need is a little determination. Men, follow me, I'll lead on. We were neck deep in the big muddy. The big pool said to push on. All at once the moon clouded over. We heard a gurgling cry. A few seconds later, the captain's helmet was all that floated by. The sergeant said, turn around, men, I'm in charge from now on. And we just made it out of the big muddy with the captain dead and gone. We stripped and dived and found his body stuck in the old quicksand. I guess he didn't know that the water was deeper than the place he'd once before been. Another stream had joined the big muddy about a half mile from where he'd gone. We were lucky to escape from the big muddy when the big pool said to push on. Well, I'm not going to point any moral. I'll leave that for yourself. Maybe you're still walking, you're still talking, you'd like to keep your health. But every time I read the paper, them old feelings come on. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep, neck deep, soon even a tall man will be over his head. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info. Okay, you're listening to Stronghold Radio. That break kind of snuck up on me. I wasn't even ready for that. Whenever I get on a roll, it's hard for me to stop and break, but I got to. I'm trying to... One, my voice needs a break. Two, it'd be nice if people would buy stuff from our store. Let's always get to play a song that... And Lou's always good at picking songs to kind of fit what we're talking about. You're listening to Stronghold Radio. I'm Dutch Jones. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. Talking about the militia versus the volunteer or draft army. Everybody always says the military would just squash the militia. Well, I think a national military has got different things. Sin City, I put a comment in there that says, we no longer grow leaders in this nation. He says he disagrees. We grow some, but they are held back and pushed away by the ones with money and an agenda. See, I would say that once you turn your kids over to the public school system, anything you've done for that first 4.5 years is completely nullified and destroyed. One, if you're turning your kids over to the public cesspool system, you're not growing a leader anyway. You're just throwing your child in the lion's den and hoping they'll get away with a little bit of leadership. We don't foster leadership, critical thinking. we don't, as a nation, where there may be individual pockets, of course, we're one here, challenge our children enough to think and to stand up to tyranny, even on the playground. Oh, don't fight that bully, Billy. Go tell a teacher. You know, don't raise your hand to a bully. Just let him take your milk money and make sure you tell a teacher. So I think as a whole, this nation no longer grows leaders. Where are they? Where are the Pattons? You know, where are the Dale Dyes? Where are the, you know, you just don't see them out there. There isn't one military leader right now serving at any level that I've met that I go, dang, that guy gets it. And at least none that are publishing anything. And if they were out there, we'd hear about them. Look at Patton. Old blood and guts. You know, you wanted something destroyed or somebody saved, you called up Patton. He knew how to do it. And you look at his lifestyle and how he was raised. He was raised to be a leader. Serving in the military. Even in the 80s and 90s, the second lieutenants were not taught to be warrior leaders. They were taught to be bookkeepers and people managers. There is nothing, you know, there are probably elite special forces units that can do things. But let me tell you something. A Navy SEAL unit wouldn't last a day in an extremely hostile environment unless they had the support of everything outside. And that's what I'm talking about. So to think that these modern armies are supermen is believing the propaganda. That, you know, the guys that supposedly went in and killed bin Laden, and I said that right, usually I say Obongo. What would have happened if every Pakistani in that neighborhood had grabbed an AK-47 and just lit up those helicopters and surrounded that little compound? They wouldn't have got out. I don't know why that didn't happen. But don't believe the hype. Farmers that are armed and fighting for their own land and their families have a huge advantage. Now, there are other factors like an industrialized nation backing them up, or otherwise we'd still have the Confederate States of America. There wasn't one armament factory in the South. That was just poor planning on the part of the Confederate leaders. And people go, what about the Native Americans? Well, the Native Americans were not a cohesive group. There was so much infighting, they couldn't mount any kind of planned event. They had a few, you know, Little Bighorn. But in a modern today scenario, if militias do what they need to do and not what they think they should do, it would just wreak havoc on any occupying force that came to this nation, inside or outside. Harassing supply lines, killing one guy at a time, gathering intelligence, poisoning water and food for the guys behind the lines, taking down communication points, taking down transportation control points. There is no way that it would be economically feasible for anybody to do anything else other than probably nuke or carpet bomb the area. If they do that, you just leave, or you go underground. Look at what the Vietnamese did. Look at what the North Vietnamese did. Look at what the Chinese did to our military. And every time I say that Vietnam vet, oh, we weren't allowed to fight. Okay, whatever. But that's what I'm talking about. When the people in Washington and the Pentagon decide how you're going to fight and not let you make a decision on the ground on which one of the two targets to take out until you send them a picture. Now, I'm going to get real practical here. I just saw a documentary this morning on the American sniper teams that are over in Afghanistan and Iraq. It was on the military channel. There's 6 guys on a sniper team now. How is he supposed to move stealthy with 6 guys? They carry tons and tons of digital transmission equipment. They literally open a laptop from their hide and chat with the command and control people and send pictures. Oh, here's this target. Can we shoot this guy? Oh, no. How about this guy? It's ridiculous. Now, you may say, well, there's some gains made in that because they make sure they get the right guy. They do the speedy stuff. It works well if the leaders behind the desks are willing to make quick decisions, but you know that's not how it works. And it also works well when you have batteries. There aren't sunspots. But let me tell you something. Every time you try to use communications in the field, something goes wrong. Wrong settings, wrong crystals, damaged when you dropped in. So to depend heavily on decentralized decision-making destroys a modern army. That's why just about every army in the last 200 years has always fielded some kind of, and I'll just call it special ops. Napoleon did it. The British did it in the Napoleonic Wars. World War I, World War II. There's always even just small groups of people that are independently allowed to go around behind the lines and do terrible things. That's a copy of the militia motif. The American Revolution, you know, they took a bunch of militias, they made the Continental Army, they brought in von Steuben, and they trained him and gave him discipline. But guys like the Green Mountain Boys, the Rangers, all that, just were force multipliers. So if you have a nation that's at war with itself or an outside force, and it's like Finland and everybody's a sniper on skis, the Russians get sent packing. And the reason I'm telling you this is because don't let these grunts, these people that have been programmed by, you know, their handlers, whether they went to West Point or some ROTC program, that come home on leave and go, oh yeah, there's no way a militia can fight us. Then why are we 11 years now? Is it 11 years in Iraq or Afghanistan? We're fighting militias. The militias of Afghanistan sent the Russians packing. They can say it as much as they want, but it's not going to change history. Militias, villagers that are angry, citizens, real citizen soldiers, not this garbage National Guard thing that happened with the Dict Act, will trump soldiers. I tell you this, but I know you're going, no, that's not true. There's no way you can go up against artillery and satellite-controlled bombing. Yes, there is. If you don't get into the rut and think, oh, we're all doomed, that's why we train people here in small units. We don't train people to be part of a massive militia. And those militias that do, that's fine. You've got these big units that are out there. I hear about them. I can't, you know, they never seem to want to talk to us because we're too small. That's fine. If they want to stand toe-to-toe with you know, the 3rd Infantry Division, more power to them. And if they've got the training to do it and God's on their side, they're going to win. No problem there. But I'm telling you that for the terrain that most of the militias are in, because they're usually rural. I mean, there are city militias, although I don't understand why. You should be training outside. Get out. Get out. Get out. Get out of the cities. It's better that we be free-moving, free to decide who to shoot when we want to shoot them, be ready to go underground at a moment's notice, be ready to take off our militia clothes and walk amongst the non-combatants. Do everything to protect and serve the non-combatants. Don't victimize them. After the War of Federal Aggression, and after Lee surrendered the Army of Virginia, there were thousands and thousands of Confederates that fought on for years. Not because they were supported by Richmond or the Confederacy. They were supported by businessmen, farmers, who knew that the cause was just. And just a handful of men can do massive amounts of damage to a standing army. A handful of men. Boys. Men and boys. That's why it's important that you train together with that paradigm, that you realize that you are, in fact, a force multiplier for liberty. Now, granted, you could come up against, you know, the fastest high-speed train guys, and you try to stand toe-to-toe with them, they're going to obliterate you. But if you always stay just beyond their reach, in the shadows, in the darkness, there's nothing they're going to be able to do to you. They'll be forced to go after your supporters and your women and your children. So you've got to protect them. You've got to be able to get your families to move at a moment's notice. It's like Jesse James, when he was a guerrilla fighter after the war and he was going around raiding federal banks and things like that. What did they do? They went to his house and firebombed it, killing his nephew or his cousin, and horribly mutilating his mother. She had to have her arm cut off. That's the way the federal troops work. That's what they do. So protect your families when you do this. That's why you've got to have an entire family cell warfare type training doctrine like we do here. And they realize that, you know, you may be off fighting the war and they're tending the crops, but they're targets. They are definitely targets. So harden your family so that they don't become soft targets. The massive amount of dependency on modern technology. I mean, I could dedicate the whole show to that. I don't know what that was. What just happened to my phone? I guess it's fully charged now. That's going to be their weakness. A soldier who honestly thinks, whether it's true or not, that, hey, if I'm wounded, and this is what they told us, if I'm wounded on the front line within 30 minutes, I will be in surgery, and the finest surgeons in the world will be saving my life. That's what they tell soldiers. Within 30 minutes, you're going to be back behind enemy lines. You're going to be back on a hospital ship in the Gulf of Aden. You'll be in Germany within a day. You'll get everything you need. That's not the truth. But you've got to convince the enemy soldier that if they take a risk, that if they get shot, they're probably going to die because they're going to be left on the battlefield. And how do you do that? You take out their medical corps. You take out their means to transport before it even leaves the helipad. And that comes with infiltration, human intelligence. You contaminate their medical supplies. That's where a militia comes in handy, because a militia can operate that way. Partisans. I don't even want to use the word militia today anymore, because so many people get hung up on that. Partisan freedom fighters, guerrillas, cell warfare, what the enemy is going to call terrorists and criminals. That's how we fight an invading force, foreign or domestic, that's overwhelming technology and manpower-wise. The first time they start seeing their brothers in arms die on the battlefield because that helicopter never comes, the ambulance never comes, or they find out that when they got back to some type of medical aid area, they were injected with contaminated stuff and they died, or they got gangrene and died because the supply of antibiotics didn't make it to the front line, or the medic never made it because he was singled out and shot first. How do you think they're... What is going... Oh, it's saying my phone's charged, I guess. Yeah, okay, the phone's charged. Sorry about that. But are you seeing what I'm putting down here, the way I'm laying this out? I don't want you to be discouraged from doing what you're doing because, oh, look, it's the Roman Legion, we can't fight them. Oh, it's the British Army, we can't fight them. Oh, it's the United States Marines are coming to disarm us after a hurricane. It's the 82nd Airborne coming in after an earthquake to get all the food we've stashed. I can't do anything. Well, if you wait till that moment to actually come up with a battle plan, you're probably right. There's nothing you're going to do except surrender and die. Become a slave to the New World Order. But when on the battlefield, you let the enemy know that if they go down, they probably won't be found. There won't be nothing but a greasy spot there. When you come across an enemy soldier after you've secured the area, you should strip him of everything he has, including his dignity. Leave him there naked with nothing on it. Nothing on his body. And as his cohorts start finding stuff like that, they're going to be like, wow, these people are serious. I don't want to get wounded. I don't want to get left behind. People say, well, how can you do this kind of thing when you're, you know, fighting, when you call yourself a Christian warrior? Yeah, I'm not saying rape the dead body or anything or set them on fire. But strip them of their dignity. Leave them naked, tied to a telephone pole. Their dead body. Take everything from them. Give them nothing. And people say, but you'll infuriate the enemy. No. When an enemy acts that way, is boastful and furious, it's fear. It's a manifestation of fear. It's just like the most guys you find when you try to pick a, you know, they're picking a fight, they act all loud and obnoxious. When it comes down to it, they're just as scared as you are, if not more. They're just being loud. You know, it's the big dummy scenario. Look at what happened. Look at Restrepo. I hate to keep referring to that. Watch Restrepo. If you haven't watched it, shame on you. When their guys start getting taken, they're like, guys are crying and falling apart. There's chaos. They don't know where it's coming from. The enemy's shooting at them from, you know, just a few meters away, and they can't even see them. They thrive on control. They thrive on having overwhelming power. They thrive on knowing where you are at all times. But the minute they don't know where you're at, they lose connection to all their firepower. You know, communication drop. They're out of range. They can't be seen. They're gonna fall apart like babies. It's kind of like, I think it was Ho Chi Minh said, grab them by the belts and hang on. It kind of deflates their firepower when you're amongst them fighting. And, you know, they're not going to fire danger close on their own guys, although they, you know, I don't know how accurate the drones really are. But it makes it awfully hard for them to do it if you're fighting, you know, close quarters like that. once your enemy realizes that, hey, they're not going to get a dust off, they're not going to get that morphine right away, that they're going to suffer a little, they'll stop taking the risks. And you will realize that your enemy is not some super trooper. They'll wear they'll have the ton of gear on, the face mask that are some scary skull, you know. They'll write slogans on their helmets, you know, kill them all, let God sort them out. That's just scared little boys trying to be macho. That's what most of them are. But the farmer who's fighting to save his family, who's only a couple miles behind, he doesn't have time for that kind of thing. He's got to get out there and kill as many of the enemy as he can, as fast as he can, and get home and harvest the crops. That's the truly important thing. And that's where the moral high ground lies. Learn now how to operate the equipment that you have. And it needs to be very little more than a knapsack with some food, your own personal first aid kit, a way to purify and transport water, a way to stay warm, and that's it. Clothes on your back and run. You don't need a whole lot of gear. I know it's coming from a guy who tries to sell all kinds of stuff, but the reality of it is, it only takes one bullet to take out the enemy, and if you're disciplined enough to make every bullet count, that's a lot of dead enemies, and you don't need to carry 1,200 rounds into battle like some of our guys are doing. I mean, look at them. They get into hand-to-hand combat. What are they going to do? They look like the Pillsbury Doughboy going out into fight battles these days. They've got 30 to 50-pound packs. Don't let them tell you they're 120-pound packs. That's always a lie. They're wearing body armor, communications equipment, magazines all over them. They can't put their arms down. Their weapons are tethered to them. The hydration systems, camera systems, comm systems, goggles, gloves, knee pads. They basically defeated all of their physical fitness training because they can't move. So if a partisan force could jump on a horse and move 20 miles in the blink of an eye while being chased on foot by these guys, even if they got Humvees, they got to get back to them and dismount, and then they're restricted to terrain that allows their vehicles to cover. Helicopters still have to land in places, and once you figure out where they're going to land them, you control those places or make them off limits to the enemy. I'm not telling you to disrespect or underestimate your enemy. I'm telling you to not overestimate your enemy. The partisan guerrilla fighting model is still a good one, and there's still a validity to training together in that paradigm and making certain that you don't lose the battle before you start because you're too afraid. You hear us say it all the time. Well, look at the British Army. They got their butts kicked by a bunch of colonials. I mean, England got kicked out of just about every country in the world that they had dominated through brute force. Talked about the fall of the Roman Empire before the break, I think it was. This nation's headed for some really, really bad times. And I don't know if it's going to be a combined threat. I don't know if it's just going to be economic with hooligans running around, or if it's going to be the UN, our own forces turning on us, our own government turning on us. I don't know. I really don't know. It's like I said at the beginning of the hour. My enemy is anybody who hates me, who seeks harm against me, my and mine. Period. So I train with that generalist attitude. When it comes down to it, I'll focus on whoever the enemy is in my sights. And I will cater each battle plan or each strategy or more than likely just tactical response to what they do. So you can't train for everything. You can't train for everybody. But you can prepare for broad-spectrum threats. And once you realize that small units moving freely in an environment they grew up in have a huge advantage over an invading force with all of its logistics, with all of its moral implications that are binding it, with the press watching them and telling them what they can and can't do, with politicians holding them by the privates saying, you can't do this, you can't do that. We as partisans are simply doing one thing, fighting for survival, fighting for the future of our children. we can do whatever it takes at any time to do whatever we need to do to that aggressor. People say, yeah, but there's snipers who've got 50 caliber rifles and they can shoot 2 miles now and blow your head off. Even if that is true, I don't believe all the propaganda that's out there. They have to request a ton of stuff before that guy gets to pull the trigger. They have to field that guy. They have to get him there. You already live here, and if you have a 50 cal, you don't have to requisition it. You don't have to get permission for it. You go get it. And there are more 50 cals in the hands of private citizens in the U.S. than all the armies of the world. I'm talking about the Barrett type, single shot type, not belt fed. But so don't defeat yourself just by that. The sniper has to sleep somewhere. Do your homework, find out where he sleeps, and kill him. Kill the guy who maintains his weapon. Kill the guy who supplies and repairs the weapon, the optics, and make sure they don't get a new one. But you're not going to do that alone. You're not going to do that sitting up on a hillside somewhere in your bunker. And then when they radio in firepower on you, it's not going to make any difference. You're only going to get to that point if you train with others who are like-minded and are willing to step up and stand in the gap. Fear is something we all have. I have fear. I just don't allow it to rule my life. I let it speed me up from time to time, like having a stroke and being afraid of dying, you know, that way. Makes it, hey, there's a few things I need to accomplish. Like man camp. The reason we're doing this, and we're getting calls from all over the place, mostly in California. People want to do this. They're like, nobody's ever offered anything like this. And I'm like, well, duh, yeah, we keep offering it. But we find another way to reach out, you know, mass mailing. I hate doing that, but it worked. Right now we've got probably 12 to 15 people coming to this first man camp. We've already got requests. Well, can you do them for mother-daughters? Yeah. We'll do a separate one for mother-daughters. But you've got to want to train. You've got to want to open the curtain and peek outside and see what's really out there before you can even understand how you're going to fight it. Stop just assuming that it's deadly, it's nasty, it's scary, that the monster knocking at the door, the big bad wolf, is just going to blow your little hut down. Size up the enemy. And then adapt to that. Overcome it. If all you can do is go get a couple 22s and a million rounds of ammunition, a 22, do that. But do the academic behind it. Have the wisdom to put your hand to the plow. Do something today for the crisis that may be coming tomorrow. I'm just one guy. I got a wife and a son full-time and a daughter part-time when I'm allowed to see her. But every moment of every day, my mind is wrapped around how can I secure their futures. Provide for them today, but secure for their tomorrow. My day is spent thinking, what can I do with this place and time that God has placed me and given me to help others understand the way I see things? That's why I do what I do, and I don't expect any less of you. I don't expect any more. I don't demand any more from any of you. But I also don't expect any less. I don't care if I'm buying a quart of oil. I think how that fits into the struggle. You may think, oh, you're fanatical, you're paranoid. No, that's how we do things. And only when you are able to do that are you really at your peak performance for what God has given you at that moment in time and space. I am not going to lose because I didn't see it coming. I am not going to lose because my stuff is lost or broken or I don't have something. Pretty much the only way I'm going to lose is if it's God's will. Or I'm not up to it physically and I can't run up that hill to take the shot. That's something I'm dealing with. I'm paying for my past sins of triple cheeseburgers now. It's in your hands, America. All of you self-styled, liberty-loving, patriotic, militia guys, whatever you want to call yourselves, freedom fighters, it's in your hands. God has given you this grace period to make it right. And in the next half hour, when we're talking about how to do it with Steve Klein and some of the other things he's doing, I want you to be focusing on that. Don't forget that we're here and reaching out to you. And you're answering the call. Now you have to do something about it. So with that, thanks for listening to Stronghold Radio's first hour. We're going to be back with Steve Klein from alterorabolish.com, abolishislam.com. We're going to talk about cell warfare, man camp, and more of what he's doing to hold your magistrates accountable for their coercion with Islam. Stay tuned. Steve's calling right now.
I cry for my country, for the pain that it's been through. She's been made to suffer for the profit of a few. Storm clouds are out forming, winds of change now touch our shores. I hear forefathers are crying as a dream's been crucified. America, I show my love for thee with strength and loyalty. America, America, I show my love for you in all that I do. Friends and family, mourning in their ignorance, while staying safe within a dream. I will fight for freedom and raise liberty. I die for my country, slaying corporate dynasties. America, now show my love for thee with strength and loyalty. America, America, now show my love for you. Set you back up on your feet. After all I've fled and no one's left, I will always be there. And be there by your side, and never let you down. I cry for my people in this time of tragedy. I just want some answers, so the truth will set us free. And the truth will set us free. I say hallelujah.
You're listening to Stronghold Radio. We're going to do something a little different here than just rolling the intro. We have a bit here from your favorite sheriff and mine from L.A. County, Sheriff Baca, and what he thinks of our Muslim brothers. Go ahead and play that, Lou.
Good evening. Assalamu alaikum. I'm deeply regretful that I cannot be with you this evening. As you listen to my message, I'm either in Qatar, Abu Dhabi, or Egypt, meeting with my Arab law enforcement colleagues. We are working on strategies of cooperation, public safety, and education on a worldwide basis. I want to thank CARE for the friendship that has been extended to me and the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Executive Director Hussam Alush and the staff are exceptional representatives of the Muslim community of America. Over the years, prior to the tragedy of 9/11, Muslim members of the Sheriff's Interfaith Advisory Council have taught me the core principles of Islam. My numerous visits to the Islamic centers within Southern California, the homes of my Muslim friends, and meetings with members of the Muslim American Homeland Security Congress have taught me the hopes, dreams, aspirations, and concerns of the Muslim American society. Your contributions to our diverse American society are historically vast, numerous, faithful, and worthy of praise. I salute each of you for your courage, your faith in God, your faith in the United States as your home, and your faith in me and your Sheriff's Department to protect you with respect and dignity. Thank you, CARE, for your thoughtfulness. The 18,000 men and women of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department and I will cherish this award. Assalamu alaikum.
There you have it, a modern-day Quisling. Bring down that monitor over there. Modern-day Quisling, he's talking about CARE, Sheriff Leroy. It's Leroy, right, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah.
Leroy Baca, down there in Los Angeles County, the largest sheriff's department in the nation, I think. What do you think about that, well, Steve? What's your view on him embracing the Arab-Muslim Brotherhood like that?
Well, it fits in perfect. Good segue from talking about the partisans versus the modern armies. Bonehead Baca, who's a former Marine, by the way, Bonehead Baca representing the modern armies, and all he's doing is pissing us off, us partisans, us true patriots. And having fought against low-tech myself with high-tech and seeing how easy it is for the low-tech guys to not only match us but defeat us, a lot of it is that when those people are in their local confines taking care of their families and their loved ones, mm-hmm. they naturally just outfight anybody. I don't care, Green Berets, Marine Corps, anybody. It's when you're defending your family, all of a sudden weasels, worms, and cowards become tigers and really think things through, and they can, a partisan unit defending its family will easily defeat the best of armies given time.
Right, right. And the hard part is when you've got your own magistrates, like Lee Baca, you know, the highest law enforcement official in Los Angeles County, willingly aiding and abetting our enemies and bringing them in and feeding them basically our young is what he's doing.
Yeah, and the LAPD are having their second meeting, like the one that we exposed a month ago. They're having their second meeting with the Muslims. This Thursday night, we're going to do a live feed through the Way TV, and Chief Beck, in charge of the LAPD, and the LAPD are the ones that are commanding us, told us face-to-face, stop demonizing the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, the Muslim Brotherhood, in fact, now there's evidence. I'll send it to you tomorrow. I've been really busy, but Al-Qaeda's producing a magazine called Inspire. Al-Qaeda's producing a real high-tech, glossy, real sophisticated magazine online from Yemen. It's called Inspire, I-N-S-P-I-R-E. You can go online right now and look at it. And the Muslim Brotherhood is talking about the Arab Awakening and that they are now working. They're going from the peaceful phase of Islam to the violent warfare jihad stage of Islam. And this Arab Awakening, this alleged democratic movement, is all part of their transition from peaceful Islam to real Islam. And yet the commander for anti-terrorism of the LAPD said that no, just the opposite, that the Muslim Brotherhood had evolved just as we are evolving. Those are his words. And that the Muslim Brotherhood is now in favor of democracy, America Constitutional Republic. So yeah, we have Quislings, we've got Judas Iscariot, Benedict Arnold, we've got traitors in the LAPD and the LA sheriffs. And folks, I got to tell you right now, this is all over the United States and all the major cities. If you live out in a small area, maybe you still have some patriots left. But Chicago, Atlanta, Dallas, Seattle, San Francisco, Phoenix, Denver, even Boise, Idaho. Boise, Idaho is bringing in several squadrons of Saudi Arabian Air Force to be trained by the United States Air Force. And, of course, They're going to open up mosques and Wahhabis and terrorists and Quislings and Sheriff Bacchus. They're all working together.
You know, and that's the amazing thing. Meanwhile, we have two Americans that were taken hostage by Abu Sayyaf in the Philippines yesterday. At the same time, the State Department's bending over backwards to get more Muslims into America. And it's insane, but they're just out in front. You've got guys like Sheriff Baca outright just saying, no, we're embracing the Muslim Brotherhood. You've got Obongo meeting with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. And guess what? There's a counter-revolution going on in Egypt right now because the people are saying, hey, we're not getting freedom with the Muslim Brotherhood. What's going on here? So, I don't know, maybe we'll go in and suppress the counter-revolution the same way we're gonna help the Muslim Brotherhood in Libya and Syria and all these other places. So your tax dollars are going to arm, train, feed, encourage the very scumbag, evil people that are going to come here and subject you to convert or die.
Yeah, I was at a briefing the other day on the new movie that's out called Iranium, which is a takeoff, of course, of uranium, and actually learned a few things in there. I was shocked that I learned. One of the really interesting things is the Muslim Brotherhood logo shares the same belief system and doctrine as the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, and that's Surah 860, where it says, strike terror into the hearts of the non-believers. And so when we do the July 29th outreach in downtown Los Angeles, I'll be carrying a sign that's the big, beautiful color logo of the Muslim Brotherhood with the Arabic at the bottom, and hopefully we'll get quite a few people out there. It's hard to say, but now I also found out that the Iranian Revolutionary Guard is working in conjunction with the Muslim Brotherhood and brought a bunch of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood into Iran a few months ago, which I find really confusing because the Muslim Brotherhood are Sunni and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard are Shiite, but that points out how much these people hate us. When Muslim groups come together, like the Sunnis and the Shiites, they only come together for one reason. They hate us so badly, they'll actually work together. So now to a Sheriff Baca, Charlie Beck, who's the police chief of the LAPD, Michael Downing is the assistant police chief of the LAPD, and once again, New York City, Buffalo, New York, Rochester, New York, Dearborn, Michigan, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Chicago, you name the state, wherever there's a Kansas City has just a terrible time with the Muslim Brotherhood there. So what we're going to see now is as the Muslims ratcheted up, the partisans and the patriots are going to begin jumping off the fence and joining Dutch Jones, Steve Klein, the different militia groups throughout the United States. By the way, my hero, Mr. Lou Lang, that was an awesome job you did on that flyer for joining the man's camp there on July 22nd. You did a really, really professional job of that sport.
Yeah, it blew me away. I left for my VA appointment and said, hey, when I get back, I want to see a website. And I came back and I saw it and I was like, this is great. He just posted it in the chat room for those of you that didn't see it. And I was like blown away and we threw a video on there. We're going to throw some more videos on there. We'll probably link to some of your stuff on there and just get... more information out that way, because the people that are calling me are saying, hey, I got the flyer in my hand, but my buddy lives in Utah and I want him to see it. Is there something he can look at? And I'm like, oh, I can email. I go, wait a minute, we'll just put up a website and direct people to it, and you can just go. All you got to do to find it, if you're listening on FM or AM, is you go to thechurch@kawia.org. remember, you spell AT, thechurch@kawia.org, and Kawia is K-A-W-E-A-H. And you go to special events and training, click on that, and you're going to see Man Camp. Click on Man Camp. And, of course, that we should link it directly to the Dutch Jones site, too. But you'll be able to see the website there. It's and we'll put some photos and stuff up there of our training courses and things like that. But right now, we've got enough interest. People are excited. And one of the comments I got that I don't think I told you, Steve, was like, why haven't we seen anything like this before? How come nobody's offered anything like this before? And I'm thinking, we've been offering it for over a year. You're obviously not looking.
Next time.
You know, we've been doing, you know, with Code 20, with the Christian Defenders, and, you know, the Christian Leagues and all that. I go, we've been doing it every month. You know, where have you been? Yep. You know, everybody wants a personal invitation.
Yeah, well, it's going good. You and Lou and Stacy, Pastor Warren Trumbull, Once again, you know, the Declaration of Independence, it's one of my favorite quotes is, after a long train of abuses. Mm. Well, when you have Sheriff Baca, the LAPD, and all of these other morons throughout the United States who hate us, who are against us, who do not love the Constitution of the United States as it was originally written, we've got these monsters and enemies are now. They've gotten so arrogant, so confident. Remember the movie The Patriot with Mel Gibson when he said that Cornwallis had a weakness, and that was he's arrogant. He thinks he's too strong. So that's when the partisans come back. The partisans, we will whack them. We will whack them because they're going to try to kill us in the next 5 to 10 years. Baca, Leroy Baca, I was at that meeting in downtown Los Angeles a month and a half ago, and here's all these deputy sheriffs and LAPD, and they're full-on Muslim Brotherhood, and they knew who we were, and we knew who they were. But there was the LAPD, the FBI, there was Homeland Security, FEMA, all these other groups, absolutely clueless. It was really interesting. There was five of us looking at about five to seven of them, and it was a poker game with neither side flinching, both sides knowing that if we could, we would have pulled guns and shot each other at that time if we could have, and have been happy to do it, too.
Much like, you know, we talked earlier today, you know, people are saying, well, who's the enemy? Who's this? Well, the enemy's who's ever sighting us in. Whoever hates me, I hate them. You know,
amen.
Who's ever coming after my kids, my faith, and my way of life, they're de facto signing their own death warrant. They're the
amen.
Enemy. It's like, you know, it's like, how do you know what pornography is? You know it when you see it. You know? Enemies of Christ are my enemy, period.
If you can't figure that one out, maybe you're dead.
Yeah, right.
By the way, we did take possession of the book Muhammad the Perfect Man. We're going that's being copyrighted, and I'm working on the introduction to it. Each copy that we sell, I sold 20 copies in about 3 minutes the other day with an audience of only 40 people. With each copy that we sell, we make a net $9, and I think I will bring up 200, maybe even 300 copies to the October outreach. They should sell like hotcakes up there. I will bring 30 of them with me at the man camp, and that $9 will go to the Church of Kuya and to Concerned Citizens for the First Amendment, and all this stuff. We are working together. There's about four of us different groups working together so that we can work as partisans. So a lot of people think, wow, but we're so small. No, we're so big. We're just not linked up together. If you take the number of partisan patriots in the United States, look at all the little tiny churches in all 50 states, churches with 20, 30, 40 people, and then you multiply that times thousands and thousands and thousands of patriots out there, that's why the partisans cannot be defeated. We actually have our Code 20. We've got our network of cell warfare, patriotic Christian cell warfare. It's all established. All we're doing right now is, like Dutch said, what took you a year to find out? Well, that's how the communication network works. So I've got 6 points that I'm going to go over in the next 35 to 40 minutes. But I want to go back to Dutch and Dutch, explain a little bit more again. Let's talk about the partisans cannot be defeated. Even Machiavelli, when he wrote his book, The Prince, the partisan soldier cannot be defeated because he's taking care of his family. So pick up on that. When you run out of air, then I'll go through these six points that we'll cover.
Well, you're going to be fluid. You know your environment because you grew up in it. You lived in it. You probably, if you built it with your own hands or the hands of your fathers and your ancestors. So a partisan is fighting in his own home. A partisan is someone who already has cohorts, already knows every cubbyhole, every hiding place, every person that can or cannot be trusted. They are the sentinels of freedom and justice in their community. And the interesting thing is, it can be good or bad. In our case, it's going to be good because we're using it for liberty for all men, regardless of race, creed, or color. But we're Christian men, and we're pushing forth the gospel, the kingdom of our Lord Jesus Christ in our homeland, because we are indeed a Christian nation. So we have the moral high ground, so you don't have to worry about whether or not you're right. You don't have to sit there and wring your hands over that every night. So what we do is righteousness. It doesn't mean the ends justify the means. It means that we are the ones being attacked. We did not bring this fight to our doorstep. They did. So we're going to deliver it right back on theirs. So as a partisan, you survive off of the will, desire, and the promotion of the people around you. Those that cannot fight with a weapon in their hands will fight with the plow, will fight with the chicken, will fight with a place for you to sleep. Go back to the James Gang and after the War of Federal Aggression. They had caches called paydays all throughout that region, the Missouri River region, that they could go to, and there would be mason jars with gold, silver, coins, and they knew safe houses. They had codes in place, communication systems already set up, so that if they were wounded in one of their endeavors, they knew a safe house they could go to get aid. The partisan system has historically been and always will be the best and smartest way to fight any war. And it's funny because our generals never figure that out. Our politicians never figure that out because they're too busy empire building, conquering a nation building. It is unscriptural to do that. Therefore, they don't fight the way God meant us to fight. As militias, they would rather have kings that will raise standing armies that are ungodly, unconstitutional, and quite frankly, unwise. So the partisan is the way to do it. Ho Chi Minh, Jefferson, everybody throughout history that got it, they kind of belittle them a little bit because everybody wants to have a great big mechanized military to do the fighting for them. It's not going to happen anymore. In the next 5 to 10 years, like Steve, I share this vision that people will come against us. They will tell us where to live. The committees, the rural committees are already taking foot in Tulare County, Fresno County. The feds have already visited Fresno County, met with the sheriff, and they're stamping out a plan. They're doing it today as we speak. The need for partisan cooperation is yesterday, but fortunately we have today to try and do some catch-up. How's that, Steve?
That's perfect, yeah. The long train of abuses, the partisans, the citizen soldier, Cincinnatus, you know, he put down his plow long enough to go and defeat whoever he defeated, and then he went right back to his plow. So the introduction, when we go up there for man camp, Dutch and Pastor are giving me a few minutes to explain basically, well, I'll go through them real quick, like, quote, the mission of this book is to recruit men who will occupy under Christ's rules of engagement to halt all forms of jihad. The mission of this book is to recruit men who will occupy under Christ's rules of engagement to halt all forms of jihad. The method will be a several-pronged approach. Number one, we're going to expose these at least 6 different myths so that we can get the men to reattach their testicles back to them and i.e. attack Islam. And then number two, under execution using code 20 and partisan warfare and that nature, guerrilla warfare, we will be able to defeat these monsters like Sheriff Baca. Here's 6 of the myths. There's probably 10 or 15 I'll have in the book, but number one, I don't have to do anything as the rapture will solve all problems. Well, we're going to solve that problem real quick. Luke 19:13, occupy until Christ returns. And that's why I chose the word occupy. The mission of this book is to recruit men who will occupy. That's a military term. And a lot of people think that that occupy means you just sit on your dead ass. No, it means you occupy, and that means you go out and attack. You attack the gates of hell, and then you return back. Partisans, look at the French resistance in World War II, the movie that we have, Algiers, and look at Restrepo. So, number one, I don't have to do anything as the rapture will solve all problems. Baloney, Luke 19:13. Number two, Jesus is the Prince of Peace, not war. War is evil. No war is good. Violence is evil, all violence. Therefore, war can never be a solution to those who love Jesus, who love peace. Well, there's the favorite verse of Lu Lang, and that's Revelations 19:11, where it says, God, Jesus, judges and makes war. In fact, he makes so much war, his horse is so deep in blood, the horse is swimming in the blood. Myth number three, you must obey the civil magistrate, even Hitler and Stalin, as the civil magistrate is ordained of God. Well, the civil magistrate is ordained of God to follow the Ten Commandments. the only authorization and ordination that the civil magistrate or the pastor or a general or admiral gets is that he has to follow the Ten Commandments. Now, I know a lot of people are shaking their heads going, that's not right. Oh, really? Well, when these civil magistrates, pastors, generals, and admirals die and they stand before Jesus, Jesus is going to say to them, when did I ever ordain you and give you authority to preach another God? Just stop at that one alone.
Yeah.
When did Jesus, God, the second person of the triune, the Trinity, when did God ever grant authority to anybody to worship another God? So that one's easy to blow apart, too. Then we go on to myth number four. Pastors don't realize it, but they reject God's ordained institution of civil government when they command we are only to preach Jesus, not to be involved in politics. So let me get this right. Some pastor, well-meaning pastor, says, I don't want to be involved in government or politics. All I want to do is lead people to Christ. Well, pastor, God himself ordained civil government. You reject God's infinite wisdom and his ordained institution of civil government and throw it out the window arrogantly by saying, I'm only going to preach Jesus? Well, I wonder what you're going to tell Jesus when he says, after you die and you're standing before him, so why didn't you try to stop the Muslims? Why didn't you try to stop abortion? Why didn't you try to stop the sodomites? And Jesus might say some other words other than, well done, good and faithful servant. Point number five follows right on with point number four. The pastor who says, I only want to preach Jesus, is not in accordance with 1 Timothy 5:8. A man who does not take care of his family is worse than a non-believer. God ordained the institution of government. It's created for a man in charge of a family to band together with other men in charge of a family to create a community, to create a government to protect the community, the family, the children, the wife, and also so that they can be protected, guess what, on Sunday morning so they can go into corporate fellowship and not worry about being murdered as they study the love, will, and law of God. Number six, this is my last point, and then Dutch, go for it. Number six, I will never defend myself or anyone else with violence. Jesus always turned the other cheek. Well, that's not in accordance with the Ten Commandments, because that's not in accordance with the two great commandments, because that's not in accordance with Romans 13:10, agape is the fulfilling of all law.
Yeah.
As it says, true love is a man laying down his life for his friend. And under the golden rule, the two great commandments, to love your neighbor as yourself. If you're not willing to defend your wife and your children, your family, your community, your government, your church, and you turn to a professional like Dutch Jones or myself and say, I'm above defending my wife and children, but Dutch and Steve, you'll do it. You know what I'd probably do? I'd probably spit in your face. And then I would defend your family. Then when you're laying there dead, I might just take a piss on you like I did on a few Viet Cong in Vietnam. And I know for some of you that sounds brutal. Well, welcome to war, comrades. Welcome to Sheriff Baca. Welcome to the LAPD. Welcome to the monsters in the United States today who are out walking around with one intention, to destroy the Church of Jesus Christ, which means to destroy you. Hey, why don't you start acting like a man?
You know, this nation no longer produces the kind of men that it used to. You know, you don't have George Patton. You know, you don't have there was like this huge generational gap. It's like the 60s generation destroyed all that. And there are no longer, huge numbers of people. You just don't see the innovation in industry. Anything. It's, you know, our sports stars are even doing drugs now to try and keep up. We don't have real hardcore Christian men anymore. And there are exceptions, of course. You know, I know a few. But as a general rule, this battle began a long time ago with the hearts and minds of our young men. And taking away their desires, their drive, their sense of responsibility to be good Christian men. Lou and I, we like to watch these like 1940s black and white, what do they call it? Shorts. They're like government produced shorts on what it is to be a young man or a good citizen. And people go, well, that was all just propaganda. Well, no. They don't even recommend 90% of what's in these videos. We watched one the other day that said if you think someone on your street might be a homosexual, what you need to do to stay away from them. You know, they don't teach that anymore. I'm serious. It's a great black and white video, wasn't it, Lou? It was like, because it showed them as predatorial and all this stuff and what they really are. And then, but now it's like, oh, no, we have to be all-inclusive and we have to love Islam and everything else out there, the Gavita, Wuda Hutta, or whatever. And like what you said, Jesus is going to look at him and say, when did I tell you to preach another god? And that's what
exactly,
all these magistrates are doing. They're preaching other gods.
Yep.
Even if they're preaching no god, they're preaching another god. And it's just there's just so much wrong with the American male. I don't even want to say psyche because that's a made-up term, but core values. And that's why it's. I wish we didn't have to do a man camp. It's ridiculous that we have to. It should be like, hey guys, let's get together and go camping and go shoot some stuff. What do you mean you've never shot anything? What do you mean you've never camped? What do you mean you don't know what to bring to an overnight in the mountains? And if you're a listener and you called me with those questions, I'm not mocking you. I'm just stating facts that those are the questions that I've gotten in the last 48 hours. Isn't it going to be cold? Are there bears? These questions that city folk are asking me are sad. You know, 50 years ago, you wouldn't get that. I mean, I've got books in the library here, Whatever Young Man Needs to Know to Be a Man, and it was written in like 1890, and if I read that out loud today in public, I'd probably be arrested, you know, for condoning these things that used to be common sense 100 years ago.
That's funny. Yeah, that's real funny. Going right back to what you said, I remember when they brought in the British invasion and all these weird dudes up there singing with long hair, acting like a bunch of screwballs. But the complete flip-flop from the black and white shorts, exactly what you're talking about. John chapter 18, verse 23. This is the first inkling, the first hint that the Lamb of God, who's about ready to be crucified, is no longer going to allow anyone to spit on him, torture him, torment him, crucify him. The Lamb of God, even before the trial is over, is doing a very fascinating thing. It's John chapter 18, verse 23. One of the officers just punched Jesus in the face.
Mm-hmm.
It says, when Jesus had said this, one of the officers standing by gave Jesus a blow in the face, saying, is that the way you answer the high priest? Jesus answered him, very interesting, if I have spoken wrongly, bear witness of the wrong. But if rightly, why do you hit me?
Yeah.
I think what Jesus is doing there, he's sending a signal that the moment for, or the time of the Lamb of God to be led to the slaughter is coming to a close.
Right.
And when he comes back, he will no longer be the Lamb of God. He will be the Lion of Judah, and he will lead his enemies to the slaughter. Amen and amen. And I think, as it says, Jesus pointed out, you will do greater things than I did.
Mm-hmm.
If I think government was ordained and given to us so that we as individuals, as families, join together, and we work together, the knit together is the body of Christ with all the various and different parts, the feet, the hands, the eyes, the ears, and all working like a symphony of different instruments make a beautiful, beautiful music, opera, or whatever.
Right.
And I think that's what Jesus was referring to. Us as individuals, no. We're virtually worthless. No man is an island unto himself. But man can't, coming together, working together, with young boys, old men, people out of shape, in shape, people with no skills, people with a lot of skills, all working. Because I can tell you right now, when I get out there, as much survival training and everything that I have done and Dutch has done, somebody who's probably never done survival training, some 15-year-old kid who likes to watch the internet, will say, well, you know, Mr. Klein, what about this? And I'll just go, hey, you know what? I didn't know that. Thanks for telling me. Thanks for sharing that. And for real, on the issues of bears and stuff, I'll be heavily armed. Lou's going up with me.
Yeah.
He'll be heavily armed. and several other guys, so you don't have to worry about the bears. And on the poncho issue, I went and priced them out. A good, decent poncho, military poncho, is $50. But here, I got a better idea for you. Go get yourself a nice 6 foot by 8 foot or 8 foot by 10 yeah. foot ground cloth. You can get one for less than $15.
Yep.
And then what you do, then all you need is a sweatshirt and a hat, like a naval watch cap, a cap. Even a baseball hat is okay. So that if you have you and your son in Vietnam, and I know Dutch did too, in Vietnam when it got really cold, wet, and nasty, we'd put four guys, we'd put a poncho on the ground and a poncho over the top, and that was it. We just hugged together and stayed together, and we used our natural body warmth to keep us warm. So if you just have a ground cloth, a sweatshirt, and sweatpants, and you got your kid, you got your son, like in the old days, hey, you just come together back-to-back and keep yourselves warm. We'll have pure. I want you to buy purification pills so that you have your own purification pills. If you bring up an empty bottle of water, if you bring up, I don't care, if you don't want to use the water purification tablets and you buy yourself, say, a half gallon of water and you want to lug it up the hill, I don't care. You know, if you want to bring a refrigerator and you want to walk through Pep Boys with a giant magnet and everything is, you know, 700 pounds of gear, I don't care. I'm not going to help you lug it because when I grow up, I'm going to have my 44 Magnum that'll kill a polar bear or grizzly bear. I'm going to have my 12-gauge shotgun with 6 rounds with buckshot, and that'll kill a wild boar or a bear, no problem. I know that Lou's going to have something that's really good that'll
stop
something
big. He'll have his 45.
Okay, yeah, 45 is real good, and just the noise itself will scare a bear or wild boar or anything away. And we're going to be real light. We're going to be light infantry. With my son gave me a real nice army pack. I've got another one for a young man, 16 years old, who's going up with me.
Great.
With written permission from his mother. I've got Dr. Gary Cass is physically unable to go up above, so he's going to spend the night down before. I know
yeah.
Dr. Gary Cass. He's one of the bravest guys I know. I've seen the Muslims threaten to cut off his head. I've seen the Muslims surround him, threaten to beat him up. He didn't flinch. He didn't blink. And so I am not worried about being macho or anything. I'm not worried at all. I'm just wanting the body of Christ, the partisans, to come together. When we go up, I'm going to talk about the North Star, how to navigate at nighttime using the North Star, how to use gravity, streams, things of that nature so you don't get lost. And then I'm going to also weave into there, Dutch and I talked about it a little bit, I'm going to weave in there the basis of apologetics, why using survival techniques we can figure out that Noah and the Ark did indeed land on Mount Ararat. And I'll go into detail on that issue when we're up above and there's nothing but stars and dark all around us.
And those that are going to be down below, we've got a couple people that have got injured feet and things like that that are coming. We'll be down below, and we'll be discussing more on bug out theory, how to train your family, different paradigms, things you should be doing now as if you're starting from zero. Unfortunately, a lot of these people that have called are starting from zero. Their wake-up call came a little late. They kept hitting the snooze button. But we're here for you, and we're going to try and help you do that kind of thing. A lot of these guys are coming because they've never trained their kids to shoot. Some of them don't even own firearms, but we're going to be on the range out there in the heat all day. It's late July. It's going to be hot. We'll throw up an easy up or something. We'll have a water station out there on the shooting range. We don't want anybody getting silly with a firearm. But bring snacks, granola, stuff in your pockets. Eye protection, we'll provide.
Cowboy hat.
Yeah, cowboy hat would be great. Boonie hat. We'll provide some hearing protection, but now's a chance to go get it. You're going to need it. We're going to emphasize on how to operate different types of firearms, not specifically any one kind, but we will show you shotguns, revolvers, semi-automatics, rifles, carbines, and give you some advice on what we think for your situation, what you should be getting, because you should have a firearm. If you're a grown man and you don't own a firearm, shame on you. But don't just go out and buy one and stick it in the closet. That's a double shame if you do that. But come out, find people that are willing to train you like us, and we will show you what you need to do. We're going to give you a big shove for your baby steps in the right direction with this course. Friday night's going to be fun if you can come out early. Get here 7 p.m. Friday night. We're going to show some videos, fellowship, bring some snacks, food. We'll be in the worship hall, fellowship hall, rather, and we'll show some of the videos, some of the presentation excerpts from Steve's Muslim presentations, some of the stuff from the church that we show. We may even whip out a good old black and white Sergeant York or something, you know. We'll watch Patriots. We could watch Patriots. That's what we could do on the big screen in there and just get you guys in a mindset so that 8 a.m. in the morning we go to the range, you know, because we got to start earlier. Usually we start at 10, but we need to start earlier. We got to get a lot in. Second half of the day will be on a tactical range. When I say half, we don't know if it's going to be 50%. It depends on how well you guys grasp the firearms. Then we're going to hit the tactical range, which is on the other side of the valley here, and we're going to show you how to do some fire and movement with airsoft rifles, father-son teams, you know, whatever. But we're going to show you, give you an idea what it feels like. These aren't toys that we're using. They're actual training aids. They weigh the same as an M4. We won't be doing any force-on-force this time, but you'll know when you hit the targets. They'll make a definite sound, and how to use your vision, how to do movement. And there's just so much. This is going to be an introduction. We've already got people saying, well, are you going to make one where I can bring my daughter, daddy-daughter? Are you going to do a mother-son? Yes, we'll do all of that. But we got to start somewhere, so we're going to start with Man Camp.
Yeah, actually, in fact, we're going to have you critique us, too, because we know that we might not go strong in one direction, too strong in another direction. Also, there's going to be some downtime. For example, I like Reiner's ice cream, and I'm going to lead a recon by force about 3 or 4 miles down the road to get Reiner's ice cream, which is as good or better than 31 flavors. Oh, so yeah. There's going to be some fun times. There's going to be some times I'll probably tell a few funny stories. You know, I know Dutch has them, too, and it's not all 100%, you know, cry and whine and be beat up during combat. There are some really funny things that happen, yeah, too. And then back to the movie, The Patriot is absolutely perfect because The Real Patriot was based on Francis Marion, the Swamp Fox. In fact, the nickname for my Judge Advocate General Marine Corps attorney, who's my First Amendment attorney now, is Swamp Fox. Hmm. Funny as heck. And we'll be talking about how Swamp Fox never fired his rifle, never pulled his sword from the scabbard. He operated under guerrilla warfare, partisan warfare, exactly what Dutch is talking about. He had less than 50 men in his group. Half of the men in his group were black kids, and there was only, I think, maybe 3 or 4 of the people in his command, a total of 50, were over 25 years old. He was a major general. A major general today has got, what, a division commander? He's got 55,000, 60,000 guys when you add everything together, Dutch?
Right, right. Two-star general.
He had 50 men. He had 50 men, and he destroyed Cornwallis. He and about 50 to 150 other bands of partisans working together, cell 20 or code 20, cell warfare, defeated the invincible army of Cornwallis, drove them into Yorktown where they had to shamedly surrender. In fact, it was so embarrassing. Part of the surrender agreement, Cornwallis would not allow Francis Marion, the Swamp Fox, in during the surrender ceremony because Cornwallis said that, well, he wasn't a real bona fide soldier,
yeah.
And but the real deal was he was so embarrassed by this ragtag guy leader of 50 guys.
Yeah.
Defeated, that's why he wouldn't allow him to show up.
Oh, yeah, he said something like, Cornwallis says, so it's come to this, a ragtag army of shop merchants and farmers have defeated the greatest military in the world. He knew. He knew things had changed.
Happens.
Yeah. That people had realized that, you know, the chink was in the armor. And England began to fall after that. India, I think, came next.
I'm going to bring up about 100 pounds of different books, not for sale. Absolutely not for sale.
Just resource.
Yeah, just for people to look at it. And it'll be on the Warfare in the Shadows, the history of guerrilla warfare from the time of before Alexander the Great, Sun Tzu, all those guys. So that you can thumb through that, I'll have the Nuremberg Trials, I'll have the Law of War and Peace, which is the basis of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10 of the United States Constitution, which states that war is conducted in accordance with a law written on the heart based on Jeremiah 31:33, Hebrews 8:10, Hebrews 8:16. We're going to do all of that, and so we'll have that. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, you got Dutch Jones, you got myself for the October conference. My son, who's one of the most highly decorated soldiers in the history of the United States Army, an actual combat medic, who had to put a tourniquet on his own body, his own left arm, which is shot up, arterial bleeding, and then he saved the life of a captain with his arm blown off and seven or eight other soldiers. He is going to be there for the October conference, but you got Dutch, and you got this really great asset, too. He's really quiet, but he is a phenomenal asset, and his name is Lou Langan. Lou, I'm not going to let you get away, man. You're going to be starting to learn to talk and working with these guys because you are brilliant and a great leader.
Yeah, he just doesn't know it yet. He thinks I'm just mean to him when I beat him every day with a stick. He doesn't realize I'm toughening him up for the enemy. But yeah, these it's funny because you look at the things that we carry with us, you know, both from just life and everyday struggles. I would say I learned how to be a fighter long before I ever joined the Army. I learned what it took to look somebody in the eyes and decide, hey, I can't take this guy in a fair fight. I got to come up with something else. Long before I ever joined the military.
I never heard of a fair fight.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
You're killing me, dude. You're killing me.
Yeah, exactly. So, but the problem is they're telling everybody to fight fair today. You can't do this. We can't do that. Oh, you know, the schools are teaching us, oh, you can't punch a bully. You have to take the beating and then report it, you know. It's ridiculous. We've made professional victims out of our entire masculine part of the species here in this nation.
Well, you know, that's a great point. I'd forgotten that, so I'm glad you brought it up. That's called zero tolerance. Well, zero tolerance is against the law written on the heart. Zero tolerance is against self-defense, and the commandment that says thou shalt not murder, the opposite of that means thou shalt protect life. And mm-hmm. if you allow zero tolerance, you're going against the law written on the heart. And when you do that, when you read the books by the Puritan Christian political scientists, then you are causing war. If you tell somebody that they cannot defend themselves, they cannot defend their wife, their family, and they show up like Sheriff Baca, the LAPD, the FBI, CIA, Homeland Security, and they say, you can't fight back? Oh, really? That's when partisans jump up, because it's written on the heart.
Yeah.
Defending and taking care of your family. When Jesus gave up his life, it's interesting if you stop and think about it. Who could possibly kill God? Who could spit on God? Who could put God in an illegal trial? Well, there was a fulfillment of prophecy. So God was literally, remember he says, no man taketh my life, but I lay it down myself.
Right. Yeah.
Jesus was actively, in his passivity, Jesus was actively helping weak man that could never destroy God until they did destroy God, because that fulfilled prophecy. But then 3 days later, he didn't come back as the Lamb of God that was going to turn his cheek. John 18:23, why do you smack me in the face? He's telling them, I'm coming back. In fact, later on, he tells Caiaphas, the high priest, you will see me coming back from clouds of glory and sitting at the right hand of God. And what mm-hmm. he was saying there, clouds of glory, his glory is a metaphor. In biblical terms, it means we're coming back to destroy you. And that's
warfare.
When Caiaphas got so scared, mad, he tore his robe. Jesus is telling him, I'm coming back, and I'm going to wipe you out.
Right.
So, yeah, that's... Dutch is doing a great job at setting the stage, and Lou Lang, Lou, dude, I tell you, that website you put together, I looked at that, that was five diamonds, that wasn't five stars, that was five diamonds, that was real high caliber.
Well, he's going to add more to it, he's going to find some more pictures, some more stuff of our training up here to kind of, I thought maybe we'd get some pictures of the ranges on there, and... the hill they have to climb. we can put that on
there. Yeah, that's going to be fun. Yeah, we'll take digital cameras up there with us. And when we're selling the Muhammad book, the principles I was talking about, we net $9 per book. And then we're going to feed that right back into the Church of Korea, Concerned Citizens for the First Amendment, The Way TV. And we're going to just join this thing at and knit the body of Christ together.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't, not any one group can do it alone. Because that way, if they strike one group, we can all just melt into the other groups. And that's how we have to do it. Because if I just sit up here and use this bully pulpit that I have, this microphone every day that I do it, eventually they're going to come and turn off the power and take away my internet and probably throw me in jail, if not kill me. And then it'll be over. But if we knit together with other groups and I share my knowledge based on how to do this, then somebody else starts up another one somewhere else. You know, Scotty 38 or IC Freedom or somebody turns on their computer and they start doing it. You know, while I'm fighting the battle in the courts, they carry the torch. But if there's nobody to hand the torch off to, it's going to get snuffed out. And that's the problem with the, and that's why I'm not using the word militia today, because I'm sick of the militia movement. They're all afraid of their own shadows, the ones that I've been encountering here in California. They're all worried about feds infiltrating them. They're all worried about what we say or do. And they live in a, and not all of them, of course, but these little groups that I'm dealing with in my own personal life, I can't speak for the big groups because they don't talk to me because I'm too small. But throughout California, there's hundreds of militias, but they're four or five guys each, and they're afraid to talk to anybody. So this partisan thing, I'm done with the militia guys. I want to talk to the shop owner that lives in the house I'm looking at next door. I want to talk to the guy who pumps gas down at the gas station for the old folks. I'm going to start anew, and I'm going to start finding these guys and showing them the right path. That's why we're doing Man Camp. We had a father-son, father and sons that were going to go to like a Quail Unlimited weekend and learn how to shoot and you know, eat little quail and all that, which is great, a fundraiser for some quail habitat. But when he got our flyer in the mail, he's like, no, I canceled that, and I'm doing what you guys do because, you know, who cares about hunting quail? I can go learn that anytime. But this type of skill set, there's a limited amount of time that they're going to allow us to do this kind of thing.
I'm so glad you brought up that point about the militia, because I looked and I saw that, you know, join the militia while you can, so maybe you could change that to partisan or some other word. Sadly, the militia, they started off really good, and then they got infiltrated by the feds and Ruby Ridge, and I understand, and I have sympathy for that, too, and everybody fled, but now the time is coming. We've gone way, way past Billy Boy Clinton and his fag-loving wife, Hillary. We're way beyond that now. It's the time for the Partisans for Christ. Maybe that'll be the name, the Partisans for Christ. That'd be PFC. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Partisans for Christ.
Yeah.
And something to look at. And, you know, a lot of this is still warfare. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that the Muslims, when they're doing, they launder money like well over 5,000 times a day, day after day after day. It goes from account to account to account. You can go online and you can look at the congressional testimony about that. Changing names, Abu Sayyaf, and all of the different names is all part and parcel to that, changing the names all the time. And then looking for knuckleheads like Sheriff Baca, LAPD Chief Beck, what an idiot, Charlie Beck, and then his sidekick Walter Mahoney and Walter Winchell, you know, the wooden-headed puppet. Michael Downing, when he said, he told our guy, stop demonizing the Muslim Brotherhood, and he says, the Muslim Brotherhood has evolved just as you and I have evolved to a higher form. And we're looking at him like, we may have evolved, dude, being silly, but you're still a Neanderthal. You haven't figured it out.
Yeah.
This is very exciting. I am starting to get speaking engagements all over the place. I'm going to be coming up to Visalia, Fresno, Oakland, San Jose, Sacramento over the next year. We're fundraising. We already incorporated Concerned Citizens for the First Amendment. We're putting up our own website. We're bringing in, we're working with, I will not say his name, but he is a retired general who used to be in charge of Delta Force. I will not say his name. He was fired by George W. Bush in Rumsfeld. He has agreed to be our keynote speaker. We're working with him. It might fall through, but he has agreed. I have to front a lot of money myself. I'll get it back on the other end, just like I'm helping out with Dutch and the Church of Queen, the Body of Christ. We share, right?
Right.
It's just the way it works.
Yeah, we'll be
we
blessed.
We share. Look at, Lou is a genius when setting up the, he's my COMO, my electronics warfare officer. So we got some huge things we're working on, and here's the gig. The more the jerks, the Satanists, Sheriff Baca, LAPD Chief, Charlie Beck, LA Assistant PD Chief Michael Downing, the more Janet Napolitano, the more these guys squeeze us, it's like stepping on a tomato. When you step on a tomato, all of the seeds, if they step, the harder they step, the further the seeds fly.
More grow.
So people that Dutch and I don't even know, people that you don't even know, are going to pick up the bloody banner of Jesus and take the Church of Christ all over the place. And the United States will not look the same in 50 years as it looked 50 years ago.
Yeah.
But rest assured, the church will not be crushed. Ain't going
to
happen.
No, we may have to go underground. We may be headed for a dark ages, but we will definitely continue to fight. And I want you to, if you don't mind, this book, Muhammad, the Perfect Man, tell us a little bit about how you were able to obtain the rights to that, because it's an interesting story as to why the original author. Anyway, go ahead and tell the story if you would.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting question. What happened there is fear. And in this book here, you will not see the author's name on the book, Muhammad the Perfect Man. You will not see it on a website. You will not see the publisher. The publisher does not list his address, and there's no copyright. There's nothing. So what happened, one of my Egyptian Christian friends approached me about 6 months ago, gave me a copy. And he says, you see anything strange about it? And I said, nah, it looks like a normal book. He says, the author's name does not appear. The publisher's name does not appear. There's no copyright. There's nothing where they could track back the guy, the author. And I went, whoa. So I started using it, and I sold 20 copies to a group of 40 people in less than 3 minutes, $10 a copy, no discounts and whatnot. And then I immediately got to thinking, well, wait a minute. Why don't we use this as a tool? If somebody's going to hand me 1 million bullets for free and say, I don't want the credit, you can take it all, use it any way you want, I immediately thought, well, I'm going to copyright it, which I just did. It's now my possession, and I'm going to use this. I'm going to write the introduction and show these six or seven different myths that we have to bust, that we can't, you know, Christians say we can't fight, we can't get involved in government, we can't care for our family. Then we'll show Muhammad the Perfect Man, where it shows the proof in Arabic and English on Arabic websites, English websites, Arabic Quran, Arabic Hadith, and then the English next to it, showing that Muhammad was queer, a transvestite, murderer, assassin, a pedophile, a liar, a cheat, transvestite, all these different things. It's got pictures in there. And it's got the Arabic URL, where to go find it online, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And when I tell, when I tell people, look, this is the best book, then I tell them, do not show this directly to a Muslim unless you're pretty buff.
Unless you're ready to fight.
Unless you're like Dutch or Lou or myself or my son. So I got the rights to the book, and praise the Lord, that's how God works, right?
Yeah, it's amazing the little connections that God's putting in our lives. Also, if you don't mind talking about it, if not, the person, and I won't say the name in case you just, you say no, the person that was a guest in Tehran for 444 days.
Yeah, a real interesting lady. A real sweet gal. I was given a lecture about 2 months ago in Calabasas, and then I went to Q&A, and this real sweet lady, she's only about 5 foot tall, and she started off her question with, I was one of the hostages for 444 days in Iran, and I just stopped. I felt like I don't know. It was just weird.
Yeah, I got chills thinking about it.
Yeah, I said, wait a minute. Tell me what you just said. She says, I was one of the hostages under Ayatollah Khomeini when they captured the embassy, and they took us as hostages for 444 days. I said, lady, come up here. Come up here right now. Your credentials are far beyond mine.
Yeah.
Come on up. And she was so gracious and so humble. The first words out of her mouth as she stood there, she was shaking so hard because she was raped and beaten for over 444 days.
Yeah.
She said, Mr. Klein, everything that you have said is absolutely true about Islam, blah, blah, blah. And she couldn't talk about her experiences, but I let her go on for about 5 minutes talking about, that's Islam, that's Islam, that's Islam. Yes, they're here. Yes, they're coming to ruin us and destroy us. So She's going to be one of our keynote speakers. I think I can get her to come up to Cahuilla for the October conference
also. That
would
be great. That would be great. Yeah. Now, where I went to college, Colorado State University, we had a professor of sheep. It was a Scotsman named Sutherland, and he was held in Lebanon for years. We kept holding vigils for him and everything, and when he finally got out, there was a big rally in Fort Collins, Colorado for him, and I just remember getting to meet him because I was with the media at the time. I had since, and he just, the horror of what he went through, being chained to a radiator for 3 years, and I think it was Beirut, and how where the rubber meets the road and how they treat individuals. And it's going to be a great experience. Hopefully we can get her up here or get her on the radio show maybe to share sometime. We can do a three-way call. Steve, the music's playing.
Oh, yeah.
It's time for us to get out of here.
God bless you.
Folks, if you're interested in hearing more about Steve, you can email me at dutch@dutchjones.info, and I will get you a connection to him. Or you can go to abolishislam.com, abolishislam.com, alterorabolish.com. That's A-L-T-A-R-A-B-O-L-O-S-I-H, alterabolish. I can't do it unless I'm writing it. I can't do it in my head. Alterabolish.com, and you can get in touch with Steve through there. You can find his bio over there and all kinds of stuff. If you want to hook him up, come have him speak at your church, your partisan group, your coffee clutch, and you're in the area, we can make arrangements. But folks, remember, just keep in touch here. We're looking for a new archivist. Fortunately, the good news is Olima got just too busy. It's good because when somebody's busy, it means things are happening in their lives. So if you're interested in being an archivist for the show, I don't want Lou to do it because he's already doing 10 other things for the show. But if you were interested, give me an email and we'll hook you up and we'll get that done. But stay tuned right here tomorrow and the next day as we talk more about Man Camp, and there's still room. And like I told Steve today, right, Steve, if we need to add instructors, that's a good thing, right?
You betcha. That's a good problem. We'll solve that problem. No problem.
Yes. So thank you all for listening. Remember, the sword is heavy, the battle is hard, but the victory belongs to the Lord alone, and he's going to ask you to stand in the gap. So I hope you answer that call. God bless you and all you do in the holy cause of liberty.
All right, my friend. Good job, buddy.